You are listening pretty late, and I'm your host, Patty Vasquez. I just told our guest, who has been on the phone with me for a few moments, that I'm nervous, and there are several reasons. One, George Takei represents so much to so many different people, so I want to just go down and tell you why he's important in our household. I have a 13-year-old son who loves sci-fi, and in particular loves the series Star Trek. And last night, he actually asked me to watch one of his favorite episodes with you, sir, which was the Naked Time. And I have to say, seeing you bare-chested, swashbuckling as one of the Three Musketeers is probably one of my favorite things. I had not seen the episode, but the reason my son loves you so much is not just for your work on Star Trek, but also for the work that you do to bring attention to so many different important issues. I grew up, my father loves Star Trek. Is there this sort of different generations of people that you are coming across that know you for so many different reasons?
Absolutely. I've trekked through many, many different worlds.
You really have.
Galactic, digital, film.
and some of our darkest moments in this country's history. And I know that you're coming to Chicago. Have you been to Chicago before?
Oh, many, many times.
Oh, many times. Well, you are...
Both in the bone-chilling cold and the wind that has me hanging on to a lamppost for dear life.
Certainly.
As well as your blisteringly sweltering summers.
Yeah, may I recommend that you come sometime perhaps during the months of April, May, and then September, October?
Those are the best times to be in your dazzling city. As well as almost any other city, springtime and fall is the best time, isn't it?
It really is. I those are my favorite times of year. But you are coming in for a wonderful occasion. You are going to be at the Chicago Theater with a screening of Star Trek II: The Wrath of Khan. How exciting for so many people to have the opportunity to not only see this movie on the big screen, but with you. What a wonderful
and
thing.
And at the Chicago Theater, which is a major landmark piece of Chicago architecture, a city known for its architecture.
It really is. It's a great venue. I have to say I'm a little bit jealous. Have you been doing this around the country?
Well, I am in Boston the night before. Mm-hmm. And the night before that, I'm in Dallas. But Dallas is a different visit. The hosts are the Dallas Holocaust Museum and Southern Methodist University.
Okay.
So I'm speaking on the internment and my advocacy for equality with LGBT people and putting that in the context of American history.
That is the thing that I think is so crucial right now is I have a degree in history, which doesn't necessarily come up that often, but it is sort of hard to have gone through so many things yourself in your lifetime and to see so much ground gained only to have it now be vulnerable in the current climate. Is that your sense of things right now?
You are so absolutely correct. I hear chilling echoes of the early 1940s today now. And in just the last 10 days, Donald Trump's presidency, it has been a chilling time. We were put into these prison camps simply because we happen to look like the people that bombed Pearl Harbor. I mean, we are Americans. We were and still are American citizens. My grandparents came from Japan. My maternal grandparents came actually in the 19th century, 1897, I think it was. And so, we're third generation Americans, and yet because we look like the people that bombed Pearl Harbor, this nation was stampeded by war hysteria, race prejudice, and the failure of our political leadership. And we were put into the innocent people, rounded up with no charges, and put imprisoned in these barbed wire prison camps, 10 of them, in some of the most hellish places in this country. And here we seem to be repeating again. So I have a petition out at care2.com/neveragain, gathering signatures, expressing our solidarity with the Muslim community, because, again, that same kind of mindlessness and fear hysteria that put us in these prison camps is happening now. And we have a president who is fearful, insecure, and incompetent. I mean, all this chaos that we've had in this country, right after his inauguration, you know, the Women's March, and then the pro-abortion march, and then now the airports all over the country are now crammed with people protesting this kind of stupidity. I mean, the other, you know, I do think that Donald Trump's presidency is going to be abbreviated, because from the beginning there was a conflict of interest, and now with this executive order banning Muslims from this country, he's got, I mean, it's so uninformed. The very source of the terrorism, terrorists coming to this country, have been Saudi Arabia and Egypt. But because Donald Trump has property, investments in those two countries, they're eliminated. So this is unconstitutional on the surface.
Indeed.
Where he has business interests are not included. And that is, those two countries are where the terrorists have come from. And he's targeted places where practically no terrorists have come to this country. The terrorism that happened, whether it's One Pulse or San Bernardino, are American-born terrorists, not people that are coming here. And people that are coming here with visas and green cards, and people who have, you know, Donald Trump says we're protecting the security by having American soldiers there fighting. Well, fighting with them are Muslims who have fought with us as interpreters.
Indeed.
And now they're being stopped at the airport and causing all this chaos. And his own fear and insecurity now is being used to foment more fear amongst people that are uninformed. The heartening thing is that, unlike the 1940s, this time we have masses of Americans who outnumber the people that supported Donald Trump at the airports, in the streets, throughout the country, resisting his ill-informed executive orders.
Well, and yes, go ahead. Sorry, sir.
Well, a congressman from Massachusetts recently said, this is a time when we need strength and to be smart. Smart and strength. Well, what we see from Donald Trump is stupidity and weakness.
And belligerence. I think that's the thing that that strikes people so hard, is that it's sort of this sweeping generalization, as you mentioned, you know, kind of putting all people in this one pile. I've been receiving emails from people who are upset that my son and I were at the airport. I had people say, I'm so disappointed to see Patty Vasquez at the airport. And I just wrote them back and I said, you know what? I'm disappointed to not see you here. So I guess we will both live with disappointment. But you know, one of the other things that people are saying over this weekend, that there were only 109 people that were detained. It only affected you. Those are numbers that were, as a, first of all, is any number acceptable to say that this is somebody?
Exactly.
At what point do we say, well, it was only 100? Well, because in the situation with the internment camps, people have basically said, well, that was the cost of protecting the rest of the country, was putting families like yours into camps.
But, you know, again, there, the facts are, we were patriotic, innocent Americans with faces that looked like the people that bombed Pearl Harbor. And the other irony is, I remember as a child, I was 5 years old at that time, I went to school in a black tar paper barrack in a prison camp in Arkansas. And we began every school day morning with a Pledge of Allegiance to the flag. I could see the barbed wire fence and the sentry towers with the machine guns pointed down at us right outside my schoolhouse window as I recited the words, "We'll live with liberty and justice for all." Stinging ironies that I, as a child, was too innocent to feel. But the other irony is, you know, right after the bombing of Pearl Harbor, young Japanese Americans, like all young Americans, rushed to the recruitment centers to volunteer to serve in the U.S. military, a very patriotic act. And this act was answered with a slap on the face. They were denied military service and categorized as enemy aliens. We were neither. We weren't the enemy, and we weren't aliens. We're American-born, educated here. And then they put us into these prison camps. But a year into imprisonment, the government realizes there's a wartime manpower shortage, and here are all these young people that they could have had, but they categorize us as enemy aliens. How to tap them? So they come down with a really offensive, egregiously offensive loyalty questionnaire. Can you imagine loyalty?
Right.
After they took our property, our home, our freedom, they want our loyalty. And there was one question. Actually, there were two questions that turned all 10 camps into turmoil. The loyalty questionnaire had to be answered by everyone over the age of 17.
Wow.
Question 27 asked, will you bear arms to defend the United States of America? This being asked of a 17-year-old young man or a 78-year-old immigrant lady. I mean, she had to answer yes or no. Will I bear arms to defend this country that was imprisoning her and her family after impoverishing us? And question 28 was even more insidious. It was one sentence with two conflicting ideas. It asked, will you swear your loyalty to the United States of America and forswear your loyalty to the Emperor of Japan? Ugh. We're Americans.
Right.
We never even thought of a loyalty to the Emperor. So if you answered no, I don't have a loyalty to the Emperor to forswear, that no applied to the first part of the very same sentence. If you answered yes, meaning I do swear my loyalty to the United States, that yes applied to the second part, which meant that you were confessing that you had been loyal to the Emperor and now were willing to set that aside and repledge your loyalty to the United States. It's this kind of stupidity that happens when people are stampeded. The authorities that put that loyalty questionnaire together, you know, didn't know what they were talking about.
Well, no,
they didn't know we were Americans.
And we are coming back to that. It does seem to be the case now where they're even using Facebook pages of people who are being held at some of the arrivals for immigration. It's one of those things where, like, you know, what do they think they're going to gain from that? I mean, to ask somebody who you've already put in such a vulnerable position, I mean, emotionally, physically, and to ask, you know, do you pledge allegiance is asking a lot. And yet my guess is everyone was afraid to obviously answer contrary. There's nothing else. What else were you going to answer?
Exactly.
with a gun at your head.
And the amazing thing is mm-hmm. that, you know, thousands of young men and women bit the bullet and swallowed the bitter taste and answered with the yeses to those questions and went from behind those barbed wire fences, leaving their families in imprisonment and to fight for this country. And this is another fact that not too many people know about, but the Japanese American men were put into a segregated all Japanese American unit, sent to the battlefields of Europe, sent out on the most dangerous missions. They were used like cannon fodder.
Ugh.
And yet they fought with amazing, incredible heroism. And they sustained the highest combat casualty rate. And when the war ended, they came back as the single most decorated unit of the entire Second World War, a record which still stands to this day. So, you know, stupid things can happen, but amazing heroism can happen under those circumstances as well. And here, the stupid thing is the two countries that produce the most terrorists that terrorize the United States, 9/11, came from the two countries that are exempted from this executive order.
Right.
Simply because Donald Trump has investments in those two countries.
Which is something that, of course, people are like, well, he hasn't said that. Do we expect him to? Do you expect him to have the executive order say, well, not here because I have buildings?
The people are telling him that already by showing up at the airports and on the streets of America demonstrating. And His tenure is going to be abbreviated because of those conflicts of interest.
So many things going on in the world. And people need to pay attention. They also need to go and enjoy themselves. I think that the conversation that you'll be having. We're going to take a quick break here. We are on the line with George Takei, who is appearing this Saturday, February 4th, at the Chicago Theater. There's going to be a screening of the film Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan. I mean, what an amazing place at the Chicago Theater on the big screen. And Mr. Takei will then take to the stage and share fascinating behind-the-scenes stories. Let's talk a little bit about that, but also I do want to continue this conversation because I have some questions, and I want to reflect on the strength of spirit. It took so many people like yourself to not only survive but to thrive after experiencing something like internment camps, World War II, so many of the horrific things that happened in the last century. Just a moment with the George Takei on the line with us on 720 WGN. We are on the line right now pretty late with George Takei. He's asked me to call him George, and that's it's a little rough for me, sir. I am so thrilled. Again, I did watch an episode of Star Trek just to prepare to get myself back into the... Because I grew up watching Star Trek with my dad, who really loved the show. And I have to say, it was a groundbreaking show in so many ways. I mean, there are scientists who admit that... who have said that they were influenced by the gadgets they saw on Star Trek. Like, I think it's like sliding doors and flip phones... scanners. Is that the list is pretty lengthy, isn't it?
Well, Gene Roddenberry, who was the visionary and the creator and producer of Star Trek, had as consultants futurists from the RAND Corporation. So a lot of the technology that you saw on Star Trek on the television series were the genuine speculations of the futurists and technologists of the time. And so when we... tore that device off our hip and flipped open our communicator, that design actually became a reality. Our early cell phones had that same design of that flip opening. So Gene was a very, very fastidious guy, as well as a deep thinker, as well as an imaginative future thinker. And he made sure that his vision of the future wasn't just wild what-ifs, but something that's rooted in the actual technological thinking of our time.
And that's that was reflected in the casting as well, a multiracial, multigender, because you hear men and women working together, regardless.
Multi-species.
Multi-species.
Spock was half alien.
That's more forward-thinking than you would possibly conjure up even these days.
Well, the thing about Gene Roddenberry was he wanted to use the future and science fiction as a metaphor for current issues of the time. And so that was very deliberate, that casting. The Starship Enterprise was a metaphor for Starship Earth, and the strength of the starship was its diversity coming together and working in concert as a team. And so you saw that in the casting of the show, people that represent the diversity of this planet, diversity of not only in terms of race, but of histories and of faith as well. And so, you know, we saw the future as one where our being together, working in concert, is the strength. And what's happening today, I mean, metaphorically using that to today, the Klingon president that we have is dividing us as a nation and weakening us.
Well, and that's the thing too, is that I think that we have to take care with language is important, and the way we sort of categorize each other. And I'm fascinated by the strength. You just mentioned strength and working together. I'm fascinated by the strength that you and the people that survived internment camps really display by not I don't how well, that's my question, I guess, is what kind of got you through not just the experience itself but the recovery afterwards to become someone who's just such an icon.
I was very young then, from 5 to 8 and a half, and I really feel that I was blessed by having extraordinary parents. You know, there were parents that understandably were devastated by that experience, and they never talked about it. And so their children knew very little about what their parents had gone through. But when I became curious about my childhood internment was when I was a teenager, and I was a voracious reader. I found escape, I guess, in reading, and I read civics books about the shining ideals of our democracy, and I couldn't quite reconcile that with what I knew to be my childhood imprisonment. So after dinner, I engaged my father in many, many after dinner conversations, and you know, he was the one that suffered the most, bore the anguish and the pain of that kind of dehumanization the most. And yet he was able to explain our American democracy to me. He said, our democracy is a people's democracy, and people can do great things. And he said, you know, you've been reading about George Washington and Thomas Jefferson, the people that articulated the high ideals, shining ideals of our democracy. They are great men, but they also kept other human beings as slaves.
Right.
So we were, you know, from the very founding, those noble ideas and the fallibility of human beings was combined. Nobility and fallibility. And so he said, our democracy is vitally dependent on people who cherish those ideals and actively engage in the process of a participatory democracy. And he said to me, you know, I'll show you how it works. And one Sunday afternoon, he took me downtown to the Adlai Stevenson for President campaign headquarters. He was one of your great governors,
yes,
of Illinois, Adlai Stevenson. And my father was very impressed by him. And I heard some of his speeches on the radio, and he was stirring. He was really inspiring. And there in that headquarters, I saw other people passionate, completely giving themselves to getting Governor Stevenson elected president. And I was inspired by that, you know, the other volunteers there. And so I stuffed envelopes and made phone calls and leafleted on the sidewalk. And I got to understand what it is that makes our democracy be true to those shining ideals. I met Eleanor Roosevelt.
What?
A heady experience. She came to visit the campaign headquarters. But, you know, what I noticed was my father excused himself. He went someplace. He wasn't in the headquarters there. And then later I learned that he knew that Eleanor Roosevelt was opposed to the internment, but she still was a Roosevelt.
Right.
And he couldn't come to shake her hand.
Oh, sure. Wow.
But I was so thrilled, you know, because I didn't know all that about Mrs. Roosevelt or, you know, all the details of internment until my father told me. But he was an amazing man that, despite all the anguish that he went through, was able to tell me what democracy was and what it took to keep it alive. You know, it's existentially dependent on good people who cherish the ideals. And ever since then, I've been, since my teenage days, actively involved in the political process.
Well, and I thank you for that. And by the way, you are, my son watched as I, we did sign up for the Care 2 petition, and he wanted to make sure that mine was registered. He was like, there it is. I think that was the one that clicked. And again, you can go to the petitionsite.com and look for Care 2 petitions. You can assign George
Takei. Care2.com/never again.
Never again. Stand
and
up for Muslims.
And particularly because it seems to be happening again.
And you can also go to the Chicago Theater and enjoy an evening with George Takei this Saturday, February 4th. It's a screening of Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan, followed by now, is this a little bit Q&A, or is it all sharing your stories and experiences behind the scenes?
Q&A. You know, it's going to be a conversation, give and take. And I'm sure there'll be questions like, well, if you were going at Warp 3 from Starbase 4, how come it took you so long?
I look forward to hearing that one. I'll be there on Saturday night as well. And I encourage people, you know, for some lovely and fun posts, but also informative. And as George said, it democracy takes showing up, participating, and being informed. And through some of the humor, you also share some great stories and some insights into not just your experiences, but those of others around the country and around the world. Thank you so much for joining us. And I know that you're on
the
schedule.
Live long and prosper.
Oh, you, my friend, please. I hope I have the opportunity to meet you, and we'd love to have you on the show again. There's going to be so much happening in the next several years as things continue.
Indeed.
And
it is going to be a turbulent mm-hmm. 4 years, if it's that.
And I think we need to continue to listen to people like yourself who have lived through the times that people just kind of brush off and go, oh, that would never happen again. And the task here is to participate and actively make sure it does not happen again.
Well, thank you. I've enjoyed our conversation.
I have. I hope I did my son proud. That's all I can say. Thank you so much, sir. We'll talk
Pleasure.
To you again soon. Have a great evening.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. More after this on 720 WGN.